cave, carrying a pair of rabbits. Without a word, he seated himself by Aragon. "How are you?" he asked.
"Very ill."
Murtagh considered him thoughtfully. "Will you recover?" Aragon shrugged. After a few minutes of reflection, Murtagh said, "I dislike asking this at such a time, but I must know. Is your Brom the Brom? The one who helped steal a dragon egg from the king, chased it across the empire, and killed Morzan in a duel? I heard you say his name, and I read the inscription you put on his grave, but I must know for certain." "Was that he?"
"It was," said Aragon softly.
A troubled expression settled on Murtagh's face. "How do you know all that? You talk about things that are secret to most, and you were trailing the Razak right when we needed help. Are you one of the Varden?" Murtagh's eyes became inscrutable orbs.
"I'm running away, like you."
There was restrained sorrow in his words. "I do not belong to either the Varden or the Empire, nor do I owe allegiance to any man but myself. As for my rescuing you, I will admit that I've heard whispered tales of a new rider, and reasoned that by following the Razak I might discover if they were true."
"I thought you wanted to kill the Razak," said Aragon.
Murtagh smiled grimly. "I do, but if I had, I never would have met you."
"But Brom would still be alive. I wish he were here. He would know whether to trust Murtagh."
Aragon remembered how Brom had sensed Trevor's intentions in Darrett, and wondered if he could do the same with Murtagh. He reached for Murtagh's consciousness, but his probe abruptly ran into an iron-hard wall, which he tried to circumvent. Murtagh's entire mind was fortified.
How did he learn to do that? Brom said that few people, if any, could keep others out of their mind without training. So who is Murtagh to have this ability?
Pensive and lonely, Aragon asked, "Where is Saphira?"
"I don't know," said Murtagh.
"She followed me for a time when I went hunting, then flew off on her own. I haven't seen her since before noon." Aragon rocked onto his feet and returned to the cave. Murtagh followed.
"What are you going to do now?"
"I'm not sure.
And I don't want to think about it either."
He rolled up his blankets and tied them to Cadoc's saddlebags.
"His ribs hurt."
Murtagh went to prepare the rabbits. As Aragon shifted things in his bags, he uncovered Zarok. The red sheath glinted brightly. He took out the sword, weighed it in his hands. He had never carried Zarok, nor used it in combat, except when he and Brom had sparred, because he had not wanted people to see it. That concerned Aragon no more. The Razak had seemed surprised and frightened by the sword. That was more than enough reason for him to wear it. With a shudder, he pulled off his bow and belted on Zarok.
"From this moment on, I'll live by the sword. Let the whole world see what I am. I have no fear. I am a rider now, fully and completely."
He sorted through Brom's bags, but found only clothes, a few odd items, and a small pouch of coins. Aragon took the map of Alagazia and put the bags away, then crouched by the fire. Murtagh's eyes narrowed as he looked up from the rabbit he was skinning.
"That sword, may I see it?" he asked, wiping his hands.
Aragon hesitated, reluctant to relinquish the weapon for even a moment, then nodded. Murtagh examined the symbol on the blade intently. His face darkened.
"Where did you get this?"
"Brom gave it to me. Why?" Murtagh shoved the sword back and crossed his arms angrily. He was breathing hard.
"That sword," he said, with emotion, "was once as well known as its owner. The last rider to carry it was Morzan, a brutal, savage man. I thought you were a foe of the Empire, yet here I find you bearing one of the Forsworn's bloody swords."
Aragon stared at Zarok with shock. He realized that Brom must have taken it from Morzan after they fought in Gilead.
"Brom never told me where it came from," he said truthfully. "I had no idea it was Morzan's."
"He never told you?" asked Murtagh, a note of disbelief in his voice.
Aragon shook his head.
"That's strange. I can think of no reason for him to have concealed it."
"Neither can I. But then he kept many secrets," said Aragon.
It felt unsettling to hold the sword of the man who had betrayed the riders to Galbatorix.
"This blade probably killed many riders in its time," he thought with revulsion, and worse, dragons.
Even so, I'm going to carry it. I don't have a sword of my own. Until such time as I get one, I'll use Zarok.
Murtag flinched as Aragorn said the name. It's your choice, he said.
He returned to skinning, keeping his gaze focused downward.
When the meal was ready, Aragorn ate slowly, though he was quite hungry. The hot food made him feel better. As they scraped out their bowls, he said, I have to sell my horse.
Why not Brom's? Asked Murtag. He seemed to have gotten over his bad temper.
Snowfire?
Because Brom promised to take care of him. Since he isn't around, I'll do it for him.
Murtag set his bowl on his lap.
If that's what you want, I'm sure we can find a buyer in some town or village.
We? Asked Aragorn.
Murtag looked at him sideways in a calculating way.
You won't want to stay here for much longer. If the Razak are nearby, Brom's tomb will be like a beacon for them.
Aragorn had not thought of that.
And your ribs are going to take time to heal. I know you can defend yourself with magic, but you need a companion who can lift things and use a sword.
I'm asking to travel with you, at least for the time being. But I must warn you, the Empire is searching for me. There'll be blood over it eventually.
Aragorn laughed weakly and found himself crying because it hurt so much.
Once his breath was back, he said, I don't care if the entire army is searching for you. You're right, I do need help. I would be glad to have you along, though I have to talk to Saphira about it. But I have to warn you, Galbatorix just might send the entire army after me. You won't be any safer with Saphira and me than if you were on your own.
I know that, said Murtag with a quick grin. But all the same, it won't stop me.
Good. Aragorn smiled with gratitude.
While they spoke, Saphira crawled into the cave and greeted Aragorn. She was glad to see him, but there was deep sadness in her thoughts and words. She lay her big blue head on the floor and asked,
Are you well again?
Not quite.
I missed the old one.
As do I. I never suspected that he was a rider. Brom! He really was an old man, as old as the Forsworn. Everything he taught me about magic he must have learned from the riders themselves.
Saphira shifted slightly.
I knew what he was the moment he touched me at your farm.
And you didn't tell me? Why?
He asked me not to,
she said simply. Aragorn decided not to make an issue of it. Saphira never meant to hurt him.
Brom kept more than that secret, he told her,
then explained about Zarok and Murtag's reaction to it.
I understand now why Brom didn't explain Zarok's origins when he gave it to me. If he had, I probably would have run away from him at the first opportunity.
You would do well to rid yourself of that sword,
she said with distaste.
I know it is a peerless weapon, but you would be better off with a normal blade rather than Morzan's butchery tool.
Perhaps. Saphira, where does our path go from here? Murtag offered to come with us. I don't know his past, but he seems honest enough. Should we go to the Varden now? Only I don't know how to find them. Brom never told us.
He told me, said Saphira.
Aragorn grew angry.
Why did he trust you but not me with all this knowledge?
Her scales rustled over the dry rock as she stood above him, eyes profound.
After we left Teom and were attacked by the Urgals, he told me many things, some of which I will not speak of unless necessary. He was concerned about his own death and what would happen to you after it. One fact he imparted to me was the name of a man, Dornad, who lives in Gilead. He can help us find the Varden. Brom also wanted you to know that of all the people in Alagazia, he believed you were the best suited to inherit the Rider's legacy.
Tears welled in Aragorn's eyes. This was the highest praise he could have ever received from Brom.
A responsibility I will bear honorably.
Good.
We will go to Gilead, then, stated Aragorn,
strength and purpose returning to him.
And what of Murtag? Do you think he should come with us?
We owe him our lives, said Saphira. But even if that weren't so, he has seen both you and me. We should keep him close so he doesn't furnish the Empire with our location and descriptions, willingly or not.
He agreed with her, then told Saphira about his dream.
What I saw disturbed me. I feel that time is running out for her. Something dreadful is going to happen soon. She is in mortal danger, I'm sure of it. But I don't know how to find her. She could be anywhere.
What does your heart say?
Asked Saphira.
My heart died a while back, said Aragorn with a hint of black humor. However, I think we should go north to Gilead. With any luck, one of the towns or cities along our path is where this woman is being held. I'm afraid that my next dream of her will show a grave. I couldn't stand that.
Why?
I'm not sure, he said, shrugging. It's just that when I see her, I feel as if she's precious and shouldn't be lost. It's very strange.
Saphira opened her long mouth and laughed silently, fangs gleaming.
What is it?
Snapped Aragorn. She shook her head and quietly padded away. Aragorn grumbled to himself, then told Murtagh what they had decided. Murtagh said, If you find this Dornad and then continue on to the Varden, I will leave you. Encountering the Varden would be as dangerous for me as walking unarmed into Urubane, with a fanfare of trumpets to announce my arrival.
We won't have to part any time soon, said Aragorn. It's a long way to Gilead.
His voice cracked slightly, and he squinted at the sun to distract himself. We should leave before the day grows any older.
Are you strong enough to travel? Asked Murtagh, frowning. I have to do something or I'll go crazy, said Aragorn brusquely.
Sparring, practicing magic, or sitting around twiddling my thumbs aren't good options right now. So I choose to ride.
They doused the fire, packed, and led the horses out of the cave.
Aragorn handed Cadox and Snowfire's reins to Murtagh, saying, Go on, I'll be right down. Murtagh began the slow descent from the cave. Aragorn struggled up the sandstone, resting when his side made it impossible to breathe. When he reached the top, he found Saphira already there. They stood together before Brom's grave and paid their last respects.
I can't believe he's gone. Forever.
As Aragorn turned to depart, Saphira snaked out her long neck to touch the tomb with the tip of her nose. Her sides vibrated as a low humming filled the air. The sandstone around her nose shimmered like gilded dew, turning clear with dancing silver highlights. Aragorn watched in wonder as tendrils of white diamond twisted over the tomb's surface in a web of priceless filigree. Sparkling shadows were cast on the ground, reflecting splashes of brilliant colors that shifted dazzlingly as the sandstone continued to change. With a satisfied snort, Saphira stepped back and examined her handiwork. The sculpted sandstone mausoleum of moments before had transformed into a sparkling gemstone vault under which Brom's untouched face was visible. Aragorn gazed with yearning at the old man, who seemed to be only sleeping.
What did you do?
He asked Saphira with awe.
I gave him the only gift I could. Now time will not ravage him. He can rest in peace for eternity.
Thank you.
Aragorn put a hand on her side, and they left together. Capture at Gilead. Riding was extremely painful for Aragorn. His broken ribs prevented them from going faster than a walk, and it was impossible for him to breathe deeply without a burst of agony. Nevertheless, he refused to stop. Saphira flew close by, her mind linked with his for solace and strength. Murtagh rode confidently beside Cadoc, flowing smoothly with his horse's movements. Aragorn watched the grey animal for a while.
You have a beautiful horse. What's his name?
Tornak. After the man who taught me how to fight, Murtagh patted the horse's side. He was given to me when he was just a foal. You'd be hard-pressed to find a more courageous and intelligent animal in all of Alagazia. Saphira accepted, of course.
He is a magnificent beast, said Aragorn admiringly.
Murtagh laughed. Yes, but Snowfire is as close to his match as I've ever seen. They covered only a short distance that day, yet Aragorn was glad to be on the move again. It kept his mind off other, more morbid matters. They were riding through unsettled land. The road to Drasleona was several leagues to their left, They would skirt the city by a wide margin on the way to Gilead, which was almost as far to the north as Carvajal. They sold Cadoc in a small village. As the horse was led away by his new owner, Aragorn regretfully pocketed the few coins he had gained from the transaction. It was difficult to relinquish Cadoc after crossing half of Alagazia and outracing Urgals on him. The days rolled by unnoticed as their small group travelled in isolation. Aragorn was pleased to find that he and Murtag shared many of the same interests. They spent hours debating the finer points of archery and hunting. There was one subject, however, they avoided discussing by unspoken consent, their pasts. Aragorn did not explain how he had found Saphira, met Brom, or where he came from. Murtag was likewise mute as to why the Empire was chasing him. It was a simple arrangement, but it worked. Yet because of their proximity, it was inevitable that they learned about each other. Aragorn was intrigued by Murtag's familiarity with the power struggles and politics within the Empire. He seemed to know what every noble and courtier was doing and how it affected everyone else. Aragorn listened carefully, suspicions whirling through his mind. The first week went by without any sign of the Razak, which allayed some of Aragorn's fears. Even so, they still kept watches at night. Aragorn had expected to encounter Urgals on the way to Gilead, but they found no trace of them. "I thought these remote places would be teeming with monsters," he mused. "Still, I'm not one to complain if they've gone elsewhere." He dreamed of the woman no more, and though he tried to scry her, he saw only an empty cell. Whenever they passed a town or city, he checked to see if it had a jail. If it did, he would disguise himself and visit it, but she was not to be found. His disguises became increasingly elaborate as he saw notices featuring his name and description, and offering a substantial reward for his capture, posted in various towns. Their travels north forced them toward the capital, Urubane. It was a heavily populated area, which made it difficult to escape notice. Soldiers patrolled the roads and guarded the bridges. It took them several tense, irritable days to skirt the capital. Once they were safely past Urubane, they found themselves on the edge of a vast plain. It was the same one that Aragorn had crossed after leaving Palancar Valley, except now he was on the opposite side. They kept to the perimeter of the plain and continued north, following the Ramah River. Aragorn's 16th birthday came and went during this time. At Carvajal, a celebration would have been held for his entrance into manhood, but in the wilderness he did not even mention it to Murtag. At nearly 6 months of age, Saphira was much larger. Her wings were massive. Every inch of them was needed to lift her muscular body and thick bones. The fangs that jutted from her jaw were nearly as thick around as Aragorn's fist, their points as sharp as Zarok. The day finally came when Aragorn unwrapped his side for the last time. His ribs had healed completely, leaving him with only a small scar where the Razak's boot had cut his side. As Saphira watched, he stretched slowly, then with increasing vigor when there was no pain. He flexed his muscles, pleased. In an earlier time he would have smiled, but after Brom's death, such expressions did not come easily. He tugged his tunic on and walked back to the small fire they had made. Murtag sat next to it, whittling a piece of wood. Aragorn drew Zarok. Murtag tensed, though his face remained calm. "Now that I am strong enough, would you like to spar?" asked Aragorn. Murtag tossed the wood to the side. "With sharpened swords? We could kill each other." "Here, give me your sword," said Aragorn. Murtag hesitated, then handed over his long hand-and-a-half sword. Aragorn blocked the edges with magic, the way Brom had taught him. While Murtag examined the blade, Aragorn said, "I can undo that once we're finished." Murtag checked the balance of his sword. Satisfied, he said, "It will do." Aragorn saved Zarok, settled into a crouch, then swung at Murtag's shoulder. Their swords met in midair. Aragorn disengaged with a flourish, thrust, and then riposted as Murtag parried, dancing away. "He's fast," thought Aragorn. They struggled back and forth, trying to batter each other down. After a particularly intense series of blows, Murtag started laughing. Not only was it impossible for either of them to gain an advantage, but they were so evenly matched that they tired at the same rate. Acknowledging with grins each other's skill, they fought on until their arms were leaden and sweat poured off their sides. Finally, Aragorn called, "Enough! Halt!" Murtagh stopped in mid-blow and sat down with a gasp. Aragorn staggered to the ground, his chest heaving. None of his fights with Brom had been this fierce. As he gulped air, Murtagh exclaimed, "You're amazing! I've studied swordplay all my life, but never have I fought one like you. You could be the king's weapon master if you wanted to." "You're just as good," observed Aragorn, still panting. "The man who taught you, Tornak, could make a fortune with a fencing school. People would come from all parts of Alagaesia to learn from him."
"He's dead," said Murtagh shortly.
"I'm sorry."
Thus it became their custom to fight in the evening, which kept them lean and fit like a pair of matched blades. With his return to health, Aragorn also resumed practicing magic. Murtagh was curious about it and soon revealed that he knew a surprising amount about how it worked, though he lacked the precise details and could not use it himself. Whenever Aragorn practiced speaking in the ancient language, Murtagh would listen quietly, occasionally asking what a word meant. On the outskirts of Gilead, they stopped the horses side by side. It had taken them nearly a month to reach it, during which time spring had finally nudged away the remnants of winter. Aragorn had felt himself changing during the trip, growing stronger and calmer. He still thought about Brom and spoke about him with Saphira, but for the most part he tried not to awaken painful memories. From a distance, they could see the city was a rough, barbaric place, filled with log houses and yapping dogs. There was a rambling stone fortress at its center. The air was hazy with blue smoke. The place seemed more like a temporary trading post than a permanent city. 5 miles beyond it was the hazy outline of Isenstar Lake. They decided to camp 2 miles from the city for safety. While their dinner simmered, Murtagh said, "I'm not sure you should be the one to go into Gilead."
"Why? I can disguise myself well enough," said Aragorn.
"And Dornad will want to see the Gedwe Ignazia as proof that I really am a rider."
"Perhaps," said Murtagh. "But the Empire wants you much more than me. If I'm captured, I could eventually escape. But if you are taken, they'll drag you to the king, where you'll be in for a slow death by torture, unless you join him. Plus, Gilead is one of the army's major staging points. Those aren't houses out there, they're barracks. Going in there would be like handing yourself to the king on a gilded platter."
Aragorn asked Saphira for her opinion. She wrapped her tail around his legs and lay next to him.
"You shouldn't have to ask me. He speaks sense. There are certain words I can give him that will convince Dornad of his truthfulness. And Murtagh's right. If anyone is to risk capture, it should be him, because he would live through it."
He grimaced.
"I don't like letting him put himself in danger for us."
"All right, you can go," he said reluctantly. "But if anything goes wrong, I'm coming after you." Murtagh laughed. "That would be fit for a legend, how a lone rider took on the king's army single-handedly." He chuckled again and stood. "Is there anything I should know before going?"
"Shouldn't we rest and wait until tomorrow?" asked Aragorn cautiously.
"Why? The longer we stay here, the greater the chance that we'll be discovered. If this Dornad can take you to the Varden, then he needs to be found as quickly as possible. Neither of us should remain near Gilead longer than a few days."
"Again, wisdom flies from his mouth," commented Saphira dryly.
She told Aragorn what should be said to Dornad, and he relayed the information to Murtagh.
"Very well," said Murtagh, adjusting his sword. "Unless there's trouble, I'll be back within a couple of hours. Make sure there's some food left for me."
With a wave of his hand, he jumped onto Tornak and rode away. Aragorn sat by the fire, tapping Zarok's pommel apprehensively. Hours passed, but Murtagh did not return. Aragorn paced around the fire, Zarok in hand, while Saphira watched Gilead attentively. Only her eyes moved. Neither of them voiced their worries, though Aragorn unobtrusively prepared to leave, in case a detachment of soldiers left the city and headed toward their camp.
"Look!"
snapped Saphira. Aragorn swiveled toward Gilead, alert. He saw a distant horseman exit the city and ride furiously toward their camp.
"I don't like this," he said, as he climbed onto Saphira. "Be ready to fly."
"I'm prepared for more than that."
As the rider approached, Aragorn recognized Murtagh bent low over Tornak.
No one seemed to be pursuing him, but he did not slow his reckless pace. He galloped into the camp and jumped to the ground, drawing his sword. "What's wrong?" asked Aragorn. Murtagh scowled. "Did anyone follow me from Gilead?"
"We didn't see anyone."
"Good. Then let me eat before I explain. I'm starving." He seized a bowl and began eating with gusto. After a few sloppy bites, he said through a full mouth, "Dornmad has agreed to meet us outside Gilead at sunrise tomorrow. If he's satisfied you really are a rider and that it's not a trap, he'll take you to the Varden."
"Where are we supposed to meet him?" asked Aragorn.
Murtagh pointed west, on a small hill across the road.
"So what happened?"
Murtagh spooned more food into his bowl. "It's a rather simple thing, but all the more deadly because of it. I was seen in the street by someone who knows me. I did the only thing I could and ran away. It was too late, though. He recognized me." It was unfortunate, but Aragorn was unsure how bad it really was.
"Since I don't know your friend, I have to ask, will he tell anyone?"
Murtagh gave a strained laugh. "If you had met him, that wouldn't need answering. His mouth is loosely hinged and hangs open all the time, vomiting whatever happens to be in his mind. The question isn't whether he will tell people, but whom he will tell. If word of this reaches the wrong ears, we'll be in trouble."
"I doubt that soldiers will be sent to search for you in the dark," Aragorn pointed out. "We can at least count on being safe until morning, and by then, if all goes well, we'll be leaving with Dornmad."
Murtagh shook his head. "No. Only you will accompany him. As I said before, I won't go to the Varden." Aragorn stared at him unhappily. He wanted Murtagh to stay. They had become friends during their travels, and he was loath to tear that apart. He started to protest, but Saphira hushed him and said gently,
"Wait until tomorrow. Now is not the time."
"Very well," he said glumly. They talked until the stars were bright in the sky, then slept as Saphira took the first watch. Aragorn woke 2 hours before dawn, his palm tingling. Everything was still and quiet, but something sought his attention, like an itch in his mind. He buckled on Zarok and stood, careful not to make a sound. Saphira looked at him curiously, her large eyes bright.
"What is it?"
she asked.
"I don't know," said Aragorn.
He saw nothing amiss. Saphira sniffed the air curiously. She hissed a little and lifted her head.
"I smell horses nearby, but they're not moving. They reek with an unfamiliar stench."
Aragorn crept to Murtagh and shook his shoulder. Murtagh woke with a start, yanked a dagger from under his blankets, then looked at Aragorn quizzically. Aragorn motioned for him to be silent, whispering,
"There are horses close by."
Murtagh wordlessly drew his sword. They quietly stationed themselves on either side of Saphira, prepared for an attack. As they waited, the morning star rose in the east. A squirrel chattered. Then an angry snarl from behind made Aragorn spin around, sword held high. A broad Urgal stood at the edge of the camp, carrying a mattock with a nasty spike.
"Where did he come from? We haven't seen their tracks anywhere," thought Aragorn.
The Urgal roared and waved his weapon, but did not charge.
"Brisingr!"
barked Aragorn, stabbing out with magic. The Urgal's face contorted with terror as he exploded in a flash of blue light. Blood splattered Aragorn and a brown mass flew through the air. Behind him, Saphira bugled with alarm and reared. Aragorn twisted around. While he had been occupied with the first Urgal, a group of them had run up from the side.
"Of all the stupid tricks to fall for!"
Steel clashed loudly as Murtagh attacked the Urgals. Aragorn tried to join him, but was blocked by four of the monsters. The first one swung a sword at his shoulder. He ducked the blow and killed the Urgal with magic. He caught a second one in the throat with Zarok, wheeled wildly, and slashed a third through the heart. As he did, the fourth Urgal rushed at him, swinging a heavy club. Aragorn saw him coming and tried to lift his sword to block the club, but was a second too slow. As the club came down on his head, he screamed,
"Fly, Saphira!"
A burst of light filled his eyes, and he lost consciousness. Dusundavar Frior. The first things Aragorn noticed were that he was warm and dry, his cheek was pressed against rough fabric, and his hands were unbound. He stirred, but it was minutes before he was able to push himself upright and examine his surroundings. He was sitting in a cell on a narrow, bumpy cot. A barred window was set high in the wall. The iron-bound door with a small window in its top half, barred like the one in the wall, was shut securely. Dried blood cracked on Aragon's face when he moved. It took him a moment to remember that it was not his. His head hurt horribly, which was to be expected considering the blow he had taken, and his mind was strangely fuzzy. He tried to use magic, but could not concentrate well enough to remember any of the ancient words. "They must have drugged me," he finally decided. With a groan, he got up, missing the familiar weight of Zarok on his hip, and lurched to the window in the wall. He managed to see out of it by standing on his toes. It took a minute for his eyes to adjust to the bright light outside. The window was level with the ground. A street full of busy people ran past the side of his cell, beyond which were rows of identical log houses. Feeling weak, Aragon slid to the floor and stared at it blankly. What he had seen outside disturbed him, but he was unsure why. Cursing his sluggish thinking, he leaned back his head and tried to clear his mind. A man entered the room and set a tray of food and a pitcher of water on the cot. "Wasn't that nice of him?" thought Aragon, smiling pleasantly. He took a couple of bites of the thin cabbage soup and stale bread, but was barely able to stomach it. "I wish he had brought me something better," he complained, dropping the spoon. He suddenly realized what was wrong. "I was captured by Urgles, not men. How did I end up here?" His befuddled brain grappled with the paradox unsuccessfully. With a mental shrug, he filed the discovery away for a time when he would know what to do with it. He sat on the cot and gazed into the distance. Hours later, more food was brought in. "And I was just getting hungry," he thought thickly. This time he was able to eat without feeling sick. When he finished, he decided it was time for a nap. After all, he was on a bed. What else was he going to do? His mind drifted off. Sleep began to envelop him. Then a gate clanged open somewhere, and the din of steel-shod boots marching on a stone floor filled the air. The noise grew louder and louder until it sounded like someone banging a pot inside Aragon's head. He grumbled to himself, "Can't they let me rest in peace?" Fuzzy curiosity slowly overcame his exhaustion, so he dragged himself to the door, blinking like an owl. Through the window he saw a wide hallway nearly 10 yards across. The opposing wall was lined with cells similar to his own. A column of soldiers marched through the hall, their swords drawn and ready. Every man was dressed in matching armor, their faces bore the same hard expression, and their feet came down on the floor with mechanical precision, never missing a beat. The sound was hypnotic. It was an impressive display of force. Aragon watched the soldiers until he grew bored. Just then he noticed a break in the middle of the column. Carried between two burly men was an unconscious woman. Her long, midnight black hair obscured her face, despite a leather strip bound around her head to hold the tresses back. She was dressed in dark leather pants and shirt. Wrapped around her slim waist was a shiny belt, from which hung an empty sheath on her right hip. Knee-high boots covered her calves and small feet. Her head lolled to the side. Aragon gasped, feeling like he'd been struck in the stomach. She was the woman from his dreams. Her sculpted face was as perfect as a painting. Her round chin, high cheekbones, and long eyelashes gave her an exotic look. The only mar in her beauty was a scrape along her jaw. Nevertheless, she was the fairest woman he had ever seen. Aragon's blood burned as he looked at her. Something awoke in him. Something he had never felt before. It was like an obsession, except stronger, almost a fevered madness. Then the woman's hair shifted, revealing pointed ears. A chill crept over him. She was an elf. The soldiers continued marching, taking her from his sight. Next stood a tall, proud man, a sable cape billowing behind him. His face was deathly white. His hair was red. Red like blood. As he walked by Aragon's cell, the man turned his head and looked squarely at him with maroon eyes. His upper lip pulled back in a feral smile, revealing teeth filed to points. Aragon shrank back. He knew what the man was.
A shade! So help me, a shade!
The procession continued, and the shade vanished from view. Aragorn sank to the floor, hugging himself. Even in his bewildered state, he knew that the presence of a shade meant that evil was loose in the land. Whenever they appeared, rivers of blood were sure to follow.
What is a shade doing here? The soldiers should have killed him on sight.
Then his thoughts returned to the elf woman, and he was grasped by strange emotions again.
I have to escape.
But with his mind clouded, his determination quickly faded. He returned to the cot. By the time the hallway fell silent, he was fast asleep. As soon as Aragorn opened his eyes, he knew something was different. It was easier for him to think. He realized that he was in Gilead.
They made a mistake. The drug's wearing off.
Hopeful, he tried to contact Saphira and use magic, but both activities were still beyond his reach. A pit of worry twisted inside him as he wondered if she and Murtagh had managed to escape. He stretched his arms and looked out the window. The city was just awakening. The street was empty except for two beggars. He reached for the water pitcher, ruminating about the elf and shade. As he started to drink, he noticed that the water had a faint odor, as if it contained a few drops of rancid perfume. Grimacing, he set the pitcher down.
The drug must be in there, and maybe in the food as well.
He remembered that when the Razak had drugged him, it had taken hours to wear off.
If I can keep from drinking and eating for long enough, I should be able to use magic. Then I can rescue the elf.
The thought made him smile. He sat in a corner, dreaming about how it could be done. The portly jailer entered the cell an hour later with a tray of food. Aragorn waited until he departed, then carried the tray to the window. The meal was composed only of bread, cheese, and an onion, but the smell made his stomach grumble hungrily. Resigning himself to a miserable day, he shoved the food out the window and onto the street, hoping that no one would notice. Aragorn devoted himself to overcoming the drug's effects. He had difficulty concentrating for any length of time, but as the day progressed, his mental acuity increased. He began to remember several of the ancient words, though nothing happened when he uttered them. He wanted to scream with frustration. When lunch was delivered, he pushed it out the window after his breakfast. His hunger was distracting, but it was the lack of water that taxed him most. The back of his throat was parched. Thoughts of drinking cool water tortured him as each breath dried his mouth and throat a bit more. Even so, he forced himself to ignore the pitcher. He was diverted from his discomfort by a commotion in the hall. A man argued in a loud voice, "You can't go in there. The orders were clear. No one is to see him."
"Really? Will you be the one to die stopping me, Captain?"
cut in a smooth voice. There was a subdued, "No, but the king..."
"I will handle the king," interrupted the second person. "Now unlock the door."
After a pause, keys jangled outside Aragorn's cell. He tried to adopt a languorous expression.
"I have to act like I don't understand what's going on. I can't show surprise no matter what this person says."
The door opened. His breath caught as he looked into the shade's face. It was like gazing at a death mask or a polished skull with skin pulled over it to give the appearance of life.
"Greetings," said the shade with a cold smile, showing his filed teeth. "I've waited a long time to meet you."
Who are you?"
asked Aragorn, slurring his words.
"No one of consequence,"
answered the shade, his maroon eyes alight with controlled malice. He sat with a flourish of his cloak.
"My name does not matter to one in your position. It wouldn't mean a thing to you anyway. It's you that I'm interested in. Who are you?"
The question was posed innocently enough, but Aragorn knew there had to be a catch or trap in it, though it eluded him. He pretended to struggle over the question for a while, then slowly said, frowning,
"I'm not sure. My name's Aragorn, but that's not all I am, is it?"
The shade's narrow lips stretched tautly over his mouth as he laughed sharply.
"No, it isn't. You have an interesting mind, my young rider.
He leaned forward. The skin on his forehead was thin and translucent.
It seems I must be more direct. What is your name? No, not that one.
The shade cut him off with a wave of his hand.
Don't you have another one? One that you use only rarely? He wants my true name so he can control me, realized Aragorn. But I can't tell him. I don't even know it myself.
He thought quickly, trying to invent a deception that would conceal his ignorance.
What if I made up a name?
He hesitated. It could easily give him away, then raced to create a name that would withstand scrutiny. As he was about to utter it, he decided to take a chance and try to scare the shade. He deftly switched a few letters, then nodded foolishly and said, Brom told it to me once. It was... The pause stretched for a few seconds, then his face brightened as he appeared to remember. It was Dusundavar Frior, which meant almost literally Death of the Shadows. A grim chill settled over the cell as the shade sat motionless, eyes veiled. He seemed to be deep in thought, pondering what he had learned. Aragorn wondered if he had dared too much. He waited until the shade stirred before asking ingenuously,
Why are you here?
The shade looked at him with contempt in his red eyes and smiled.
To gloat, of course. What use is a victory if one cannot enjoy it?
There was confidence in his voice, but he seemed uneasy as if his plans had been disrupted. He stood suddenly.
I must attend to certain matters. But while I am gone, you would do well to think on who you would rather serve. A rider who betrayed your own order, or a fellow man like me, the one skilled in arcane arts. When the time comes to choose, there will be no middle ground.
He turned to leave, then glanced at Aragorn's water pitcher and stopped, his face granite hard.
Captain! He snapped.
A broad-shouldered man rushed into the cell, sword in hand. What is it, my lord? He asked, alarmed.
Put that toy away, instructed the shade.
He turned to Aragorn and said in a deadly, quiet voice,
The boy hasn't been drinking his water. Why is that?
I talked with the jailer earlier. Every bowl and plate was scraped clean.
Very well, said the shade, mollified. But make sure that he starts drinking again.
He leaned toward the captain and murmured into his ear. Aragorn caught the last few words.
Extra dose, just in case.
The captain nodded. The shade returned his attention to Aragorn.
We will talk again tomorrow, when I am not so pressed for time. You should know I have an endless fascination for names. I will greatly enjoy discussing yours in much greater detail.
The way he said it gave Aragorn a sinking feeling. Once they left, he lay on the cot and closed his eyes. Brom's lessons proved their worth now. He relied on them to keep himself from panicking and to reassure himself.
Everything has been provided for me. I only have to take advantage of it.
His thoughts were interrupted by the sound of approaching soldiers. Apprehensive, he went to the door and saw two soldiers dragging the elf down the hallway. When he could see her no more, Aragorn slumped to the floor and tried to touch the magic again. Oaths flew from his lips when it eluded his grasp. He looked out at the city and ground his teeth. It was only mid-afternoon. Taking a calming breath, he tried to wait patiently. Fighting Shadows. It was dark in Aragorn's cell when he sat up with a start, electrified. The wrinkle had shifted. He had felt the magic at the edge of his consciousness for hours, but every time he tried to use it, nothing happened. Eyes bright with nervous energy, he clenched his hands and said,
Narg's Riza!
With a flap, the cot's blanket flew into the air and crumpled into a ball the size of his fist. It landed on the floor with a soft thump. Exhilarated, Aragorn stood. He was weak from his enforced fast, but his excitement overcame his hunger.
Now for the real test.
He reached out with his mind and felt the lock on the door. Instead of trying to break or cut it, he simply pushed its internal mechanism into the unlocked position. With a click, the door creaked inward. When he had first used magic to kill the Urgles in Yazwak, it had consumed nearly all of his strength, but he had grown much stronger since then. What once would have exhausted him now only tired him slightly. He cautiously stepped into the hall.
I have to find Zarok and the elf. She must be in one of these cells, but there isn't time to look in them all. As for Zarok, the Shade might have it with him.
He realized that his thinking was still muddled.
Why am I out here? I could escape right now if I went back into the cell and opened the window with magic. But then I wouldn't be able to rescue the elf. Saphira, where are you? I need your help.
He silently berated himself for not contacting her sooner. That should have been the first thing he did after getting his power back. Her reply came with surprising alacrity.
Aragorn, I'm over Gilead. Don't do anything. Murtagh is on the way.
What a...
Footsteps interrupted him. He spun around, crouching as a squad of 6 soldiers marched into the hall. They halted abruptly, eyes flickering between Aragorn and the open cell door. Blood drained from their faces.
Good. They know who I am. Maybe I can scare them off so we won't have to fight.
Charge!
Yelled one of the soldiers, running forward. The rest of the men drew their blades and pounded down the hall. It was madness to fight 6 men when he was unarmed and weak, but the thought of the elf kept him in place. He could not force himself to abandon her. Uncertain if the effort would leave him standing, he pulled on his power and raised his hand, the Gedwe Ignazia glowing. Fear showed in the soldiers' eyes, but they were hardened warriors and did not slow. As Aragorn opened his mouth to pronounce the fatal words, there was a low buzz, a flicker of motion. One of the men crashed to the floor with an arrow in his back. 2 more were struck before anyone understood what was happening. At the end of the hall where the soldiers had entered stood a ragged, bearded man with a bow. A crutch lay on the floor by his feet, apparently unneeded, for he stood tall and straight. The 3 remaining soldiers turned to face this new threat. Aragorn took advantage of the confusion.
Thrystar!
He shouted. One of the men clutched his chest and fell. Aragorn staggered as the magic took its toll. Another soldier fell, pierced through the neck with an arrow.
Don't kill him! Called Aragorn, seeing his rescuer take aim at the last soldier.
The bearded man lowered his bow. Aragorn concentrated on the soldier before him. The man was breathing hard, the whites of his eyes showed. He seemed to understand that his life was being spared.
You've seen what I can do, said Aragorn harshly. If you don't answer my questions, the rest of your life will be spent in utter misery and torment. Now where's my sword? Its sheath and blade are red. And what cell is the elf in?
The man clamped his mouth shut. Aragorn's palm glowed ominously as he reached for the magic.
That was the wrong answer, he snapped.
Do you know how much pain a grain of sand can cause you when it's embedded red-hot in your stomach? Especially when it doesn't cool off for the next 20 years and slowly burns its way down to your toes. By the time it gets out of you, you'll be an old man.
He paused for effect.
Unless you tell me what I want.
The soldier's eyes bulged, but he remained silent. Aragorn scraped some dirt off the stone floor and observed dispassionately,
This is a bit more than a piece of sand, but be comforted. It'll burn through you faster. Still, it'll leave a bigger hole.
At his word, the dirt shone cherry red, though it did not burn his hand.
All right, just don't put that in me, yelped the soldier. The elf's in the last cell to the left. I don't know about your sword, but it's probably in the guardroom upstairs. All the weapons are there.
Aragorn nodded, then murmured,
Slither.
The soldier's eyes rolled up in his head, and he collapsed limply.
Did you kill him?
Aragorn looked at the stranger, who was now only a few paces away. He narrowed his eyes, trying to see past the beard.
Murtagh, is that you? He exclaimed.
Yes, said Murtagh, briefly lifting the beard from his shaven face. I don't want my face seen. Did you kill him?
No, he's only asleep. How did you get in?
There's no time to explain. We have to get up to the next floor before anyone finds us. There'll be an escape route for us in a few minutes. We don't want to miss it.
Didn't you hear what I said?
Asked Aragorn, gesturing at the unconscious soldier.
There's an elf in the prison. I saw her. We have to rescue her. I need your help.
An elf.
Murtagh hurried down the hall, growling,
This is a mistake. We should flee while we still have the chance.
He He stopped before the cell the soldier had indicated and produced a ring of keys from under his ragged cloak.
"I took it from one of the guards," he explained.
Aragorn motioned for the keys. Murtagh shrugged and handed them to him. Aragorn found the right one and swung the door open.
A single beam of moonlight slanted through the window, illuminating the elf's face with cool silver.
She faced him, tense and coiled, ready for whatever would happen next. She held her head high with a queen's demeanor, her eyes, dark green, almost black, and slightly angled like a cat's, lifted to Aragorn's. Chills shot through him. Their gaze held for a moment, then the elf trembled and collapsed soundlessly. Aragorn barely caught her before she struck the floor. She was surprisingly light. The aroma of freshly crushed pine needles surrounded her.
Murtagh entered the cell.
"She's beautiful, but hurt.
We can tend to her later. Are you strong enough to carry her?"
Aragorn shook his head.
"Then I'll do it," said Murtagh, as he slung the elf across his shoulders.
"Now, upstairs."
He handed Aragorn a dagger, then hurried back into the hall littered with soldiers' bodies. With heavy footsteps, Murtagh led Aragorn to a stone-hewn staircase at the end of the hall. As they climbed it, Aragorn asked, "How are we going to get out without being noticed?"
"We're not," grunted Murtagh.
That did not allay Aragorn's fears. He listened anxiously for soldiers or anyone else who might be nearby, dreading what might happen if they met the Shade. At the head of the stairs was a banquet room filled with broad wooden tables. Shields lined the walls, and the wood ceiling was trussed with curved beams. Murtagh laid the elf on a table and looked at the ceiling worriedly.
"Can you talk to Saphira for me?"
"Yes."
"Tell her to wait another 5 minutes."
There were shouts in the distance. Soldiers marched past the entrance to the banquet room. Aragorn's mouth tightened with pent-up tension.
"Whatever you're planning to do, I don't think we have much time."
"Just tell her and stay out of sight," snapped Murtagh, running off.
As Aragorn relayed the message, he was alarmed to hear men coming up the stairs. Fighting hunger and exhaustion, he dragged the elf off the table and hid her underneath it. He crouched next to her, holding his breath, tightly clenching the dagger. 10 soldiers entered the room. They swept through it hurriedly, looking under only a couple of tables, and continued on their way. Aragorn leaned against a table leg, sighing. The respite made him suddenly aware of his burning stomach and parched throat. A tankard and a plate of half-eaten food on the other side of the room caught his attention. Aragorn dashed from his hiding place, grabbed the food, then scurried back to the table. There was amber beer in the tankard, which he drank in 2 great gulps. Relief seeped through him as the cool liquid ran down his throat, soothing the irritated tissue. He suppressed a belch before ravenously tearing into a hunk of bread. Murtagh returned, carrying Zarok, a strange bow, and an elegant sword without a sheath. Murtagh gave Zarok to Aragorn.
"I found the other sword and bow in the guard room. I've never seen weapons like them before, so I assumed they were the elves."
"Let's find out," said Aragorn through a mouthful of bread.
The sword, slim and light, with a curved crossguard, the ends of which narrowed into sharp points, fit the elf's sheath perfectly. There was no way to tell if the bow was hers, but it was shaped so gracefully he doubted it could be anyone else's.
"What now?" he asked, cramming another bite of food into his mouth. "We can't stay here forever. Sooner or later the soldiers will find us."
"No," said Murtagh, taking out his own bow and fitting an arrow to the string. "We wait. Like I said, our escape has been arranged."
"You don't understand. There's a Shade here. If he finds us, we're doomed."
"A Shade?" exclaimed Murtagh.
"In that case, tell Saphira to come immediately. We were going to wait until the watch changed, but delaying even that long is too dangerous now."
Aragorn relayed the message succinctly, refraining from distracting Saphira with questions.
"You messed up my plans by escaping yourself," groused Murtagh,
watching the room's entrances for soldiers.
Aragorn smiled.
"In that case, perhaps I should have waited. Your timing was perfect, though. I wouldn't have been able to even crawl if I had been forced to fight all those soldiers with magic."
"Glad to be of some use," remarked Murtagh.
He stiffened as they heard men running nearby.
"Let's just hope the Shade doesn't find us."
A cold chuckle filled the banquet room.
"I'm afraid it's far too late for that."
Murtagh and Aragorn spun around. The Shade stood alone at the end of the room. In his hand was a pale sword with a thin scratch on the blade. He unclasped the brooch that held his cape in place and let the garment fall to the floor. His body was like a runner's, thin and compact. But Aragorn remembered Brom's warning and knew that the Shade's appearance was deceiving. He was many times stronger than a normal human.
"So, my young rider, do you wish to test yourself against me?"
sneered the Shade.
"I shouldn't have trusted the captain when he said you ate all your food. I will not make that mistake again."
"I'll take care of him," said Murtagh quietly, putting down his bow and drawing his sword.
"No," said Aragorn under his breath. "He wants me alive, not you. I can stall him for a short while, but then you'd better have a way out for us."
"Fine, go," said Murtagh. "You won't have to haul him off for long."
"I hope not," said Aragorn grimly.
He drew Zarok and slowly advanced. The red blade glinted with light from torches on the wall. The Shade's maroon eyes burned like coals. He laughed softly.
"Do you really think to defeat me, Dusundavar Frior? What a pitiful name. I would have expected something more subtle from you, but I suppose that's all you're capable of."
Aragorn refused to let himself be goaded. He stared at the Shade's face, waiting for a flicker of his eyes or twitch of his lip, anything that would betray his next move.
"I can't use magic for fear of provoking him to do the same. He has to think that he can win without resorting to it, which he probably can."
Before either of them moved, the ceiling boomed and shook. Dust billowed from it and turned the air grey while pieces of wood fell around them, shattering on the floor. From the roof came screams and the sound of clashing metal. Afraid of being brained by the falling timber, Aragorn flicked his eyes upward. The Shade took advantage of his distraction and attacked. Aragorn barely managed to get Zarok up in time to block a slash at his ribs. Their blades met with a clang that jarred his teeth and numbed his arm.
"Hellfire, he's strong!"
He grasped Zarok with both hands and swung with all of his might at the Shade's head. The Shade blocked him with ease, whipping his sword through the air faster than Aragorn had thought possible. Terrible screeches sounded above them, like iron spikes being drawn across rock. Three long cracks split the ceiling. Shingles from the slate roof fell through the fissures. Aragorn ignored them, even when one smashed into the floor next to him. Though he had trained with a master of the blade, Brom, and with Murtagh, who was also a deadly swordsman, he had never been this outclassed. The Shade was playing with him. Aragorn retreated toward Murtagh, arms trembling as he parried the Shade's blows. Each one seemed more powerful than the last. Aragorn was no longer strong enough to call upon magic for help, even if he had wanted to. Then, with a contemptuous flick of his wrist, the Shade knocked Zarok out of Aragorn's hand. The force of the blow sent him to his knees, where he stayed, panting. The screeching was louder than ever. Whatever was happening, it was getting closer. The Shade stared down at him haughtily.
"A powerful piece you may be in the game that is being played, but I'm disappointed that this is your best. If the other riders were this weak, they must have controlled the Empire only through sheer numbers."
Aragorn looked up and shook his head. He had figured out Murtagh's plan.
"Saphira, now would be a good time."
"No, you forget something."
"And what might that be?"
asked the Shade mockingly. There was a thunderous reverberation as a chunk of the ceiling was torn away to reveal the night sky.
"The dragons!"
roared Aragorn over the noise and threw himself out of the Shade's reach. The Shade snarled in rage, swinging his sword viciously. He missed and lunged. Surprise spread across his face as one of Murtagh's arrows sprouted from his shoulder. The Shade laughed and snapped the arrow off with two fingers.
"You'll have to do better than that if you want to stop me."
The next arrow caught him between the eyes. The Shade howled with agony and writhed, covering his face. His skin turned grey. Mist formed in the air around him, obscuring his figure. There was a shattering cry. Then the cloud vanished. Where the Shade had been, nothing was left but his cape and a pile of clothes.
"You killed him!" exclaimed Aragorn.
He knew of only two heroes of legend who had survived slaying a Shade.
"I'm not so sure," said Murtagh.
A man shouted, "That's it! He failed! Go in and get them!" Soldiers with nets and spears poured into the banquet room from both ends. Aragorn and Murtagh backed up against the wall, dragging the elf with them. The men formed a menacing half-circle around them. Then Saphira stuck her head through the hole in the ceiling and roared. She gripped the edge of the opening with her powerful talons and ripped off another large section of the ceiling. Three soldiers turned and ran, but the rest held their positions. With a resounding report, the center beam of the